Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking to Stanford professor and physician Greg Hammer. He's a pediatrician. In fact, he's a pediatric intensive care physician, pediatric anesthesiologist, and he's a professor at Stanford University Medical Center. And he is also author of Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. We're talking in part one a little bit about the challenges that confront healthcare professionals, but these days we're all first responders of a sort because we're all part of the lockdown and we're all subject to stress. We're uncertain about our futures, our jobs, our own health, the health of our loved ones. Some of us are stuck at home with kids. So, Greg, what are some of the risk factors that can adversely affect our health during this coronavirus crisis?
Well, Ron, for sure, you mentioned stress. I think we as healthcare professionals in particular are used to having some control, kind of driving the bus. And this is a situation in which, albeit we have some control around the edges in terms of wearing protective gear and so on, generally, we're not in control here. We're just waiting for the next shoe to drop. And so that uncertainty, especially for we physicians, I think, leads to stress. And as you know, acute stress is something that is teleologically advantageous under selected circumstances where our forebears were running away from a predator, for example, and the surge in epinephrine and cortisol in their bloodstream gave them extra energy to flee, et cetera. But when that stress becomes chronic, it is really maladaptive. And that is that the circulating epinephrine levels and cortisol and other stress markers in our bodies have deleterious effects. And there are lots of data on the effects of chronic stress, including suppression of the immune system. That's partly related to the cortisol levels, partly related to other mediators. Beside our immune system, chronic stress has adverse effects on our circulation, on our cardiovascular system, and really other organ systems. And it actually ages us. I don't know if you're familiar with the science of looking at telomeres.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Telomeres are the little caps at the end of our chromosomes, and I kind of liken them to the wrapping of at the end of shoelaces. It kind of keeps the ends of the chromosomes from fraying. And as we age, these telomeres get shorter, and our chromosomes are therefore subject to more damage. And chronic stress actually is shown to result in shorter telomere length, or at least is associated with shorter telomere length. So there are lots of objective markers, if you will, of chronic stress, and none of them are positive. So I think it's really imperative that as we talk about burnout and chronic stress, that we have tools to increase our own personal resilience. And that's really what drove me to write this book.
So what are some of the ways that we can cultivate resilience? I think that's an important word. I mean, we can't, again, the stress is there. And, you know, I think, you know, one way to cope with stress is to be in denial. And I think some people have done a good job of practicing denial. But denial ain't too adaptive. You know, on the Serengeti plain, when there was, you know, a saber-toothed tiger chasing us, it was actually the right thing to do to light out.
Exactly. Well, I think another word for denial or a manifestation of denial is resistance. So we tend to suppress some of these adverse feelings and try to ignore them, and they always come back to haunt us. So I have an equation in my book, which is, because we physicians love equations, and I'm also a pharmacology researcher, so I'm very familiar with using math in my research. But the equation is suffering equals pain times resistance. Okay. So we have a painful experience. It's perfectly understandable to feel the pain, but when we deny it or we resist it, it increases the suffering. Mm-hmm. So the key in that sense is to work on the ability to lower our resistance, in this case, to stressful and painful circumstances, and just experience them, opening our hearts to them, but then have the ability to let them go. But denying them and suppressing them is certainly not the way to go.
It's like a pressure buildup in a closed system. You know, eventually something's going to blow, you know, so you have to have a pressure
valve.
So, and what are, you know, from a practical standpoint, what are some of those pressure valves during this crisis?
Well, I think that, as I said, uncertainty is probably the biggest one, and physicians are comfortable being in control and uncomfortable or have chronic stress, actually, from this uncertainty. But I think the answer to improving our resilience is in the acronym that I used in my book, which is GAIN. And the GAIN stands for what I think are the four pillars of resilience and happiness. And those are gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. So gratitude is a well-known antidote to chronic stress, and I think is really paramount. Almost all of us have much for which to be grateful. And again, because of our negativity bias, we dwell on the negative. We tend to forget all of those things for which we have lots of cause to be grateful. I'm in my beautiful home on campus looking at a garden. Instead of focusing on my social isolation and inability to spend time with my girlfriend, I bring myself to being so grateful for my circumstances, for loved ones, for my ability to have a wonderful job at a wonderful place. You know, I'm an art lover. I have a wonderful art collection. There's just so many things for which to be grateful. And I think we start our GAIN practice with that.
Take inventory on all the positive things in your life that you've accomplished. And, you know, just because you may not be doing them now or have access to them doesn't mean that they haven't been part of your makeup.
Exactly. And you know, it just occurred to me the other day that I'm sort of a 20th century history buff, and I've read lots of books about the early part of the century with respect to the plague and also the great flu epidemic of 1918. And we should be grateful if we have to endure this kind of pandemic that we have all of the resources available compared to what our grandparents had in 1918. You can imagine just being in a home completely isolated, no internet, probably no telephone service. You've got people sick and dying and even deceased in our midst and not the capability for even removing the bodies. So we're so much better off now, and I think if we just think back to 100 years ago and appreciate where we are now, like, for example, just during this call, you and I connecting and connecting with your listeners is really a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. So we do have a lot for which to be grateful.
Indeed.
So I was getting to the A in GAIN, and we were talking about denial versus acceptance, and we all experience lots of pain and suffering. I think there's a bit of a background resonance from even centuries ago when we enslaved our brothers and sisters from Africa and elsewhere, and how the environment nowadays is being ravaged, and things in politics that just nothing's getting done, it seems, although there is something being done with regard to the pandemic. But there are lots of things around us that bother us and are sources of pain. I actually lost my son 3 years ago, almost to the day. And, you know, this is something that in my morning GAIN meditation, it's the first thing that comes to my mind when I'm breathing in and meditating and contemplating acceptance, is these are things that we cannot change, and we need to open our hearts and just let that painful experience in and sit with it. And then we can kind of peel back the onion layers gradually and let it go. And I think that's the second key beside gratitude is learning to accept.
Lord's Prayer, you know, you can probably recite it. I've forgotten the precise language.
Yeah, well, the Serenity Prayer is essentially that we need to have the wisdom to discern what we can change or what we cannot change, or maybe we have the intelligence and the power to make that distinction, and then the wisdom to accept things we cannot change. And that's really fundamental to many different religious and philosophical beliefs. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, that's a pillar, one of the four pillars to resilience. Mm-hmm. The third one is intention. And I don't know whether you have taken any class in mindfulness or have a practice, but Jon Kabat-Zinn, who the PhD and is still quite active, but back in the 70s began this program in a number of patients he had with post-traumatic stress disorder who weren't responding to conventional therapy. And basically, mindfulness is the focus on being present in a purposeful manner. And the purposefulness is key. We can actually rewire our brains and actually shift away from this negativity bias that we have if we pay attention to it and we have purposefulness. So one example of that, Ron, is, I don't know if you're familiar with a program that came out of Duke called Three Good Things.
No.
But essentially, you can hop on that study anytime you want. Mm-hmm. I think there's a guy named Brian Sexton who's leading it, but if you Google Three Good Things in Duke University, you'll probably find it. And the idea is you take a quality of life survey, and then you join this program where every evening before you go to bed, you intentionally, with purpose, think of three good things that happened during the day. Mm. So I do this every evening. Tonight, I will think of this meeting you, which has been really a pleasure, and how wonderful it's been to communicate with you and your listeners, and I'll go for a bike ride later today. It's mm-hmm. beautiful here, and I'll have a good meal, and I'm reading a wonderful book. So I will have lots of things for which to think of as good things in my day, mm-hmm. and simply by thinking of those things before you go to sleep, and it doesn't take any time. You can do it while you're turning the bed down or putting your pajamas on, and it's quite simple. Just by thinking of three good things, these surveys, quality of life surveys, show that people sleep better and they become happier.
That's very powerful.
And, you know, I would invite all of your listeners to try it. And the point is that even after the age of 30, contrary to popular opinion, we have the ability to change the way our brains function. Our brains retain this plasticity. And with intention, we can actually bend that curve of negativity toward the positive.
We can rewire our brains, which sometimes have maladaptive circuitry, which kind of propels us towards negative rumination.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And then the end in gain is non-judgment. And we all, if we think about it, know how exhausting it is, all these neural circuits that are firing, constantly comparing ourselves to others and, you know, various things in our environment to each other, and labeling things as good or bad or smart or not smart, etc. It's rather exhausting, and it's not a positive process, actually. And so, again, using our intention, we can let go of judgments that we have and just sit in the world exactly the way the world is. We didn't create it. We're not going to cure it. We can just dwell in it, abide, and let judgments go. I think we'll all feel much better. And I tell some stories in the book about that as well.
And a corollary to that might be envy, or alternatively, what if thinking, you know, like I'm here, but I want to be there, or the grass is greener.
Exactly.
So you are a pediatrician, so you're intimately familiar with kids and to some extent with their psychology. You work with a lot of very ill kids in the intensive care unit. What's the message for parents who are now locked down with kids? Kids can't go to school. They can't have their play dates. It's getting a little claustrophobic, and, you know, kids pick up on the vibe. You know, the vibe is tense.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I know that you're well aware of this, Ron, since you have kids, but Kids do, they're extremely perceptive, as most of us know, and they really look to their parents for guidance, both verbal and nonverbal. So what we as parents can do is go to our own gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment, and be present with our children and remain calm and try to let go of the stress that we feel. And our kids will pick up on that, and they'll do remarkably well. On the other hand, if they see us as being stressed and you know, CNN is always on in the background and the sky is falling, then our kids will also be stressed and have negative consequences. So I think the first thing and the most important message is for us to try to convey a sense of gratefulness, presence, and calm to our kids. That's the most important. And I think a lot of us are spending more quality time with our family than we have in years.
Indeed.
So there is the opportunity there, despite the hardship of having them at home all the time and getting bored and not playing with their friends.
How do we explain to them, you know, some of the new facts of life, which is that people need to wear masks, or, you know, a lot of people walking around with these scary looking masks, and that they have to wash their hands while, you know, singing happy birthday two times consecutively? You make it a game, or, you know, how do you address that in a positive way?
Yeah, good question. Well, I'm a proponent of being completely honest with our kids. And so obviously there's certain things that, depending on their age, may not be a benefit to discuss with them. But everything you just mentioned, I think, is something that even small children can handle if we explain it to them. So this is going to be something they will remember if they're older than about 3 years, certainly. They'll remember this for the rest of their lives. And they'll remember we, their parents, and how we dealt with it, and hopefully how we explained things to them, and we're just completely open and honest with them. I think that is the best approach. I do believe that our kids are quite capable of understanding what's going on around them as long as we share that information with them.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine the continuing free resource to you, and I know that's important during this ongoing coronavirus crisis. And now back to our guest, Stanford professor and author, Dr. Greg Hammer. And, you know, you talk about resilience. What are ways in which we can cultivate resilience for our kids? Because we want to leave them with a legacy of resilience to confront, you know, future challenges.
That's a great question, Ron. It's kind of surprising to me just to take a step back and recognize that there's no part of our public education, or probably even our private education, as kids are in grade school and then middle school and high school and thereafter, which focuses on resilience and how we can live in the world and be kind and generous and so on. And I would go back to these four principles of gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment, and really talk to our kids about those things. So if our kids are complaining, you know, I think we should listen, understand, respond appropriately, but remind them how we have so much for which to be grateful. And I'm sure that all of us as parents can enumerate lots of things. One is, you know, they have a family that they're with at this time, and certainly many other things for which to be grateful. So I would espouse those fundamentals. And in fact, I would really advocate that they be part of our school curriculum as well.
Coming back to the medical scene, do you see changes in store for the medical profession where issues like burnout and resilience will be more incorporated in physician support programs, medical education, in residency programs, and to support medical professionals as they progress through their career and, you know, maybe they're experiencing challenges. Do you want to be part of that initiative?
Yes, absolutely. I think that things are changing. Excuse me. We, for example, you may be aware of the restriction in resident hours, which actually I think was triggered by an incident at one of the emergency departments in New York City.
Right.
Whereby people are up all night and yes. So we've already started to take steps in that direction, and examples would include the limitation in residence hours, and we make sure they don't come back to the hospital for a significant period of time if they stayed late so they can get a reasonable night's sleep at home and so on. Obviously, when you and I were training,
what
these
a sea
were
change
not,
from when we were training. Because there was this machismo attitude, which is, you know, this is kind of a hazing ritual. If you make it, you know, if you make it here, you can make it anywhere, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, oh, I was, you know, I got 2 hours of sleep. Well, I got a half hour of sleep. You know, it was like.
Absolutely. And threads of that are still woven into the fabric of our culture and medicine today. But I do think it is changing. And, you know, another example is that we've started this WellMD program at Stanford and other university medical centers and private hospitals as well are picking up on this as well, that they have, I know of several examples in the Bay Area where hospitals and universities have wellness programs, and they include things like access to therapists, to mindfulness programs, to compassion training, and a number of other things. So that's another very positive change is the rise of emphasis on wellness and organized programs within medical centers to address wellness.
That's actually a little controversial because some people push back against that. They said the whole system inherently stinks, and you're just sort of putting like you know, air freshener on it by teaching doctors to meditate and relax and, you know, chill out and you know, mindfulness. When the system so militates against physician frustration and depression and dysfunctionality. So the system has to change too, as opposed to, you know, individual efforts to, you know, sort of adapt to a system which inherently is flawed.
Yes, I totally agree with you, Ron. And that's why the WellMD rubric at Stanford is, if you can imagine, a pie cut into thirds. And these are the drivers of burnout and also the cures. And the first one is, as we discussed, is really creating a culture of wellness. And the second one is working on these practice efficiencies, like right-sizing the number of techs and other support staff space, which I know is at a premium everywhere, but working on elements of practice efficiency. And then the third wedge of the pie, if you will, is really our own resilience. So yes, none of those three by themselves is going to allow us to make any progress.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
It's a three-pronged approach.
Great. All right. Well, you know, I really want to commend you for your efforts to address this important problem. The book is Gain Without Pain. It's coming out next month. You can probably pre-order it. The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, much needed amidst the current challenging medical environment, but also with important lessons for the general public during our COVID-19 lockdown. I want to thank you very much and wish you all the best as you endeavor to change the face of medicine, make things better for all of us.
Thank you so much, Ron. It's really great to be with you. Call on me anytime you'd like.
And your website, by the way, GregHammerMD.com, correct? What kind of resources will people find there?
GregHammerMD.com.
What sort of resources will people find there?
Well, this is a new enterprise for me. This is the book and everything related to it, including the website. So it will be growing over time. Hopefully there'll be links to podcasts such as this one and both television and radio interviews, as well as some links to resources. And it'll get more fleshed out as time goes by. But it's sort of a work in progress at this point.
everything is a little bit on hiatus during this crisis, I imagine. Thanks very much for joining us, Dr. Greg Hammer.
Okay, Ron. Well, thank you very much for having me again.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.